This is an iHeart podcast.
All right, let's discuss the protests over the weekend. The school your child goes to, John Bolton got indicted, the low T GOP, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, before we get into the rest of the show, the John Bolton stuff and everything else, let's address the elephant in the room. That would be the No Kings protests over the weekend. Now, just a little background on this, leading up to this, stuff that we talked about many times before on the show. Remember, communism, for all of its history, it has understood the power of large public demonstrations, protests, riots, things like that. All the way back to the Bolsheviks, they've always understood that. And where they can't generate actual, genuine, you know, crowds, they will create them. In fact, most of communist history is them creating crowds. You create professional, essentially riot organizations. You pay professional rioters. They spread information about an upcoming protest or riot on social media, trying to gin up popularity for them. And then on the day of it, yes, there'll be some people there who are deranged communists. We'll get to them in a moment. But the leaders of it are almost always going to be paid and organized. Almost every communist protest you've ever seen in the United States of America was paid and organized. Paid and organized. They never advertised that, of course. The idea is they want you, they want me, to feel like these are organic things. People were just mad about Trump. But they're never organic things. Paid and organized. That's why pallets of bricks show up. That's not cheap. That's why professional signs show up. That's why they're paid and organized. All right, we got that. Now, leading up to Saturday, you saw Democrat politician after Democrat politician after communist activists talking about the No Kings protest on Saturday. No Kings this, No Kings that. So it was professional. It was paid. It was organized. And it was the standard bunch of freaks. In fact, if you want to feel really great about something, because I watched a lot of it, what clips and things like that, what I could, the organic part of it never happened, really. There were the professionals, of course. Most of those were easy to spot. The other ones who showed up were just old, deranged communists. Those are the most committed communists in the country, old gray hairs now, former hippies usually. And, you know, weirdo, freak, trannies, furries, all these other people. It didn't turn out to be what they wanted it to be. They wanted it to be this mass movement that sucked in the normies, but normies overall are happy with the Trump administration. They just are. Its approval numbers remain over 50%. That's very high for a modern American president. The American people, as of right now, are happy with Donald Trump. If he ran for election today, he'd win again. That's just the bottom line. Now, speaking of the elephant in the room, this portion of the No Kings protest is getting a lot of attention.
Hey! You ever heard of Ozempic, you
f***? Right? We saw that walking ad for Ozempic making fun of Charlie Kirk's death, making fun of his assassination. Now, okay, that, look, some crazy, deranged street animal being violent is not exactly something that's going to surprise you at all. It didn't surprise me. If you watch I'm Right, you understand full well how truly deranged and violent these people are. We'll get into the why in a moment. But I did want to take just a little sidebar here and point out that as soon as I saw Chungus there making fun of Charlie Kirk's assassination, I thought to myself, well, let's play a little game. I always play this game. You can play it with me from now on when you see things like that. What is she? Teacher, nurse, or social worker? Teacher, nurse, social worker. Every time it's one of them. And of course, lo and behold, people dug into it online, lives of TikTok, many others, and they found out Chungus was, in fact, a teacher. This brings me to you and me. I know we are all, many of us are stuck in our current situation of some kind. Maybe you're stuck in your town or your school district. I understand that. So I need to put this disclaimer on it. If it's possible for you, get your child out of government schools. If that's not possible, because most people say, it's not possible, I can't, we're stuck here, I can't afford private school, I can't homeschool, okay, I got that. At least get involved in your child's school. Why am I always able to play that game, teacher, nurse, or social worker? Because it's always a teacher, nurse, or social worker. Yes, there are wonderful teachers, wonderful nurses. I've never met a wonderful social worker, but either way, that profession is full of violent, disgusting communists who only took that job so they would have access to your child. Not so they could teach them reading, writing, or arithmetic. They took that job so they could take your child and break them. It's bad. Frankly, it's a national security issue. Here's communist John Denver at the No Kings rally pretending to be a public speaker.
Republicans, Democrats, independents, black, brown, white, this 68-year-old Jewish baby boomer, Muslim small business owners, Christian Gen Zers, this is, as iGen said, we are the majority of America. And what do we want? What do we want? We want the promise of America for everyone. We want a voice in our future. We are standing up in peaceful, patriotic protest, just like our founders called out. No thrones, no crowns, no kings. We are standing up because we don't want our streets militarized. We don't want our neighbors disappeared by masked Asians.
Oh, that's hard to listen to. It's not just Chungus. It's the teaching profession from top to bottom. So let's talk about the other aspect of it. Because there were many, many, many celebrating, cheering on the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And one thing you probably noticed, most of them were old.
We need to get ourselves together, and we might even need to be a little bit meaner, because the Republicans don't mind being mean.
And by mean, what do you mean? Do you mean protesting? Do you mean...
Maybe we have to, I don't know, stop being so nice.
Because you seem like a pretty nice lady.
I'm a pretty nice lady, but I can be pretty mean, too.
Okay, and I have to ask this because people on the other side are going to say that they feel like the Democrat Party has been mean. Recently, with Charlie Kirk being assassinated,
Charlie Kirk is a piece of garbage. Of course we were mean. I am so tired of people saying, oh, but, you know, it's a terrible thing. No, Hitler is dead. I'm glad Hitler's dead. Evil people have no place in my world. He was a hateful human being. It was disgusting, the things that he said and did. I don't have time for that. I'm sorry. I have to point my energy in other directions.
I need to explain to you what has happened. Why do you see so many older people so mean, so vicious, so violent? Because that's not how I personally think of older people. That's not been my experience in my own family. I think of my grandma Helen, she worked in her garden. She quilted. She made homemade applesauce. That's the only good thing she made. But still, wonderful woman. My grandpa Hank, a farmer, you know, goes to church every Sunday. This is how I picture older people. So why are there so many older people like this? Well, my grandpa Hank and grandma Helen went to church for 70, 80 years. They loved their family for 70, 80 years. Worked hard for 70, 80 years. You travel down those paths, at the end of it, you are more wonderful than anyone else because you've been on the right path for 70, 80 years. How is that disgusting hag celebrating the murder of a 31-year-old husband and father? She's traveled down a dark path for 70, 80 years. You don't magically become wonderful when your hair turns gray and your skin gets wrinkly. It's going to depend on the paths you take. And that brain-dead, disgusting loser, I guarantee she goes home every single night and she turns on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, and she hears this.
Donald Trump is America's Hitler.
Yeah. A unified Reich? That's Hitler's language. That's not America's. He cares about holding on to power. I care about you.
Donald Trump is acting like a Nazi, talking like a Nazi, and now posting like a Nazi.
And by the way, out there, that hat that you keep wearing, that red hat that says Make America Great Again, that tells people that you go along with this. So you might as well just put a swastika on the hat.
Adolf Hitler was interviewed, and I'm quoting from his article where he was interviewed. He said, "Therefore, I say America is for Americans." Stephen Miller took the stage on Sunday evening, and he said, "America is for Americans." He is parroting the exact words of Adolf Hitler.
What could you do to Adolf Hitler? What would your conscience allow you to do to Adolf Hitler? Anything, right? Shoot him, torture him, beat him. You can do whatever you want to Adolf Hitler. Why have they spent years calling you Hitler? Nazi Hitler, Nazi Hitler, Nazi Hitler, Nazi Hitler. Well, it's not because they believed it. It's because they understood their brain-dead street animal followers would be programmed by that kind of language. And now we have legions of people in this country, many of them women, who believe the death of their political opponent is preferable.
Who are you going to kill?
Nazis.
Who do you define as a Nazi?
What do you mean? It's pretty...
In this context, who's a Nazi?
Stephen Miller's a Nazi.
So you're going to kill Stephen Miller?
If I had a chance, yeah, I would.
I don't know if that's something I'd say on camera, bro.
This is a nightmare that I'm living in, and I'm here to make a difference and to be loud and proud, and there's no other way I'd want to celebrate my birthday than with my parents and my best friend fighting for our country.
So for a birthday present, what do you hope happens? You know, you wake up tomorrow morning.
I hope that I see the obituary that we're all waiting for tomorrow. That's what I hope for.
Yeah. you wishing that President Trump is dead?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, okay. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
They think they're the good guys. This is how they talk with each other. They'll say it on camera. You're fighting Nazis. You can do whatever you want. I will remind you again that we have not seen the last political assassination, the last political death in this country. There are simply too many communists who are violent, who believe that hurting you, hurting the people you vote for, is a righteous cause, and therefore they will do it. They will. This will continue. I don't know how we wade our way through this, but it's going to be a rough patch, all right? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. If that saddens you, by the way, let me make it a little easier on you. You know what I do when I'm bummed out about something? I snack. I'm a big snacker. Get yourself some Vandy crisps. That always helps me. Look, I need some chips. Whenever I'm watching these deranged freaks, and I don't want to look like them. Well, how do you do that? I want a snack, but I don't want to look like them. My goodness, I can't be cupcaking over my pants. That's why you need Vandy crisps. You see, normal chips are full of all kinds of cancer-causing, fattening filth. You don't want to look like that. You don't want to feel like that. Why don't you get the option that doesn't use seed oils? Why don't you get the option, minimal ingredients? You can eat Vandy crisps guilt-free, and they're fantastic. Multiple flavors. VandyCrisps.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word. One that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Neyfakh. from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so let's have an uncomfortable talk here really quickly. We've talked about many, many, many things before on this show, and there's one thing we've talked about many times before, and that's that there is a small, and getting smaller, a small cabal of red state GOP senators that are preventing so many amazing things. The second we start slamming the door shut on communism, a red state GOP senator will stick his foot in that door so we can't ever quite get there. And so our challenge, your challenge and my challenge, and it is going to be a mountain to climb, is going to be getting these guys out. Finally getting these guys out of office. And let's be honest, it's very, very, very difficult to primary and defeat an established GOP senator. When it comes to these guys, they're going to raise so much money. They're all of the swamp, so they're going to have 100% name ID in whatever state they're in. They're going to raise a gargantuan amount of money, and it's just going to be difficult. They're going to have a huge amount of control, by the way, over the GOP in that state. The state GOP, they have so many inroads. It's hard. It's really, really hard to get rid of one of these guys. And we'll do it, don't get me wrong, but it's going to take us years. It won't be next election cycle. Years as we slowly but surely work and raise money and find good candidates and come close and lose. It's going to take years. Which brings us to Donald Trump. And I understand that we always have to take the good with the bad. And that Donald Trump is doing really an outstanding job in his second term as president. We have to be fair about that, doing an outstanding job. But, like all human beings, he is imperfect. But imperfect actually doesn't describe how unbelievably bad he is at endorsing within the party. Lindsey Graham. In case you forgot who Lindsey Graham is, this Lindsey Graham.
So this bill would allow judges to take guns away from a guy like this before it's too late.
My bill with Blumenthal, the grant program for red flag laws, I think we've got in a really good spot with the White House, but that's just part of the package.
If the committee decided to, say, increase by $100 million your budget, could you spend it wisely?
I can assure you that any money that this committee thinks
good
sees fit, I promise it'll be good to
use. I believe you.
Pardoning the people who went into the Capitol and beat up a police officer violently, I think was a mistake because it seems to suggest that's an okay thing to do.
This idea, give up on Ukraine makes the world safer. If you pull the plug on Ukraine because you don't have enough capability, there goes Taiwan.
You and your people, you're the ally I've been hoping for all my life. Not one American has died defending Ukraine. You've taken our weapons and you've kicked their ass. And I'm very proud to have you as our ally.
Lindsey Graham has been there sticking his foot in that door for a very long time. Donald Trump just came out and announced his first in-person fundraiser in 2026. Who's it for? Lindsey Graham. And this is the frustration. The swamp, the deep state, they kneecap Donald Trump every chance they get. Every time they get a moment to kneecap Donald Trump, they do so. When Lindsey Graham was there on camera getting to second base with Christopher Wray, that was while Christopher Wray was working to undermine Donald Trump, the right, every chance he got. The deep state is after Donald Trump, and Donald Trump knows this, and Donald Trump is frustrated with this. He yells about it all the time, but then turns around and endorses it, endorses the people who fill it, endorses the people who protect it. My frustration is the mountain we have to climb. Whether Trump's involved or not, it is a very, very hard thing to primary a senator. So that mountain we have to climb is already brutal. It's cold. It's high. Donald Trump makes it 10 times higher when he continues to endorse the people he should be opposing. It makes your life harder. It makes my life harder. We have red state senators we can remove. We can get rid of John Cornyn. We can get rid of Lindsey Graham. We can get rid of James Lankford. We can get rid of these red state, John Thune. These red state GOP senators can be removed if he at least just gets out of the way. But please, stop working against us. Stop working against yourself. When Donald Trump endorses Lindsey Graham, he works against himself. And that's a fact. All right? All right. We're going to talk about John Bolton with Miranda Devine. Before we talk about John Bolton, let me talk to you about your cell phone service. Talk to you about Pure Talk. You see, AT&T is horrible. Verizon's a really bad company. T-Mobile hates you. They hate you. I remember last time I walked by a T-Mobile store in the mall. It was during Pride Month. And it was rainbowed out. It was awful. Switch to Pure Talk so you can stop funding that. You'll be paying less. You'll stop funding garbage. You'll start with a company that's led by a Vietnam veteran, a company that hires Americans. Make the switch to Pure Talk. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, Republicans used to believe that not prosecuting criminals led to more crime. The answer here is take the politics out of the decision and, in this case, proceed with the prosecution and do the same for anybody else who does anything even remotely like it. Just read the indictment and ask yourself, if the government can prove what they allege here, shouldn't this man go to jail? The simple fact he had the documents for any reason or no reason should subject him to prosecution.
John Bolton is in some very serious trouble. Joining me now, Miranda Devine, host of the wonderful Pod Force One podcast, of course, New York Post. All right, Miranda, how much trouble is John Bolton actually in? I know I'm biased. I want to see him go to prison, but I also don't want to blow smoke. Is he in bad trouble?
Hi, Jesse. I think he is. I mean, what we've seen so far in the indictment is, and also just evidence that's out there, is that he kept classified information and he was emailing it to two members of his family. And this was at a time when he was being hacked by the Iranians and when he was being questioned by law enforcement or intelligence people about what the Iranians might have hacked into. Apparently, he didn't mention that he'd been using this classified information and emailing it in an insecure manner. So that's pretty serious. And, judging by his own metrics of justice, he should go to jail for a very long time. I'm sorry to sort of say that, because John Bolton previously, until he was always a neocon and a warmonger, but he was on the Republican side, And really, until he joined Donald Trump and was an abject failure and then became a never-Trumper, I would never have wanted to say such a thing. But now he's proved himself to be really Trump deranged. And that really, I guess, has nothing to do with his guilt or otherwise. But the fact is, it sort of mutes any sympathy I might have for him.
Miranda, can you help me? Can you help us, everybody, understand why do these people do this? This seems to be so unbelievably common with these people who have access to national security secrets. They not only take them home, they share them. They're emailing them. What do they get out of this? Why are they doing this?
Well, to be fair, I think that there is an argument that the government has overclassified material, and so maybe some of this stuff isn't really vital to national security. But there's also just an arrogance with people like John Bolton, and like Joe Biden is another one who, you know, he would have been pinged for illegally maintaining classified material, removing it from where it should have been, way back to his Senate days. And the only reason he got off scot-free was because the special counsel said that no jury would find him guilty because he's an elderly, they would see him as an elderly man with a poor memory. And so I think there's arrogance. And I also think there's ulterior motives. That classified information is worth a lot of money. It's worth trading for. And so in John Bolton's case, he was writing a book. He wanted to, I guess, use that information to refresh his memory. And in Joe Biden's case, he also was having a ghostwriter write his book. And he famously on tape said to the ghostwriter, I think I've got that classified material right here. And also, there's no proof of this, but since he was in bed and his family was making lots of money from the Chinese and other Russians, Ukrainians, various nefarious characters around the world, any classified information would be very worthwhile to America's adversaries.
Miranda, speaking of Joe Biden, what's this Joe Biden CIA cover-up story? Because it sure sounds like a really, really big deal.
Which one?
That it's so sad that you even have to ask that clarifying question. So dirty, so corrupt. I mean, pick your government agency. We have to decide which particular scandal we're talking about was covering up for Joe Biden. I'm, of course, talking about the most recent one, where it looks like, sounds like Joe Biden ordered the Central Intelligence Agency to drop looking into him.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was an ongoing motive of his vice presidency, and I wrote a whole book about it. It was the CIA, the FBI. In this case, he wanted this information about the Ukrainians had been talking about how Joe Biden was coming into Kiev and lecturing them about corruption, saying corruption is a cancer, when his own son was on the board of Burisma. And there was a spy or a source that the CIA was informed by, that there was a lot of consternation in Ukraine, that they were angry about this, that the people close to the then President Poroshenko, Petro Poroshenko, didn't like the fact that Joe Biden was jetting into town, telling them what to do about corruption and not helping them at all. Basically, it was the vice president's office, his national security advisor, who said, we now have an email that shows that he said, oh, please redact that from the president's daily brief. So it never went into circulation like it should have. And therefore, America's national security interests were harmed, because there were lots of people who were doing business with Ukraine from the government at that time who should have been aware of these negative feelings from Poroshenko and his inner circle towards Joe Biden. I mean, it seems obvious now. It should have really been obvious to them at the time. But to censor that is shocking. But there's lots of glimpses into the CIA covering up for Joe Biden. In one example more recently, the IRS whistleblowers, then IRS investigators Gary Shapley and Joe Ziegler, wanted to interview Hunter Biden's sugar brother, Kevin Morris, the Hollywood lawyer who funded him to the tune of at least $7 million, paying off his tax bills and funding his lavish lifestyle in California. So they wanted to interview Kevin Morris. Obviously, he was a material person. And they were told by prosecutors that Langley, CIA headquarters, had summoned the prosecutors and said, hands off Kevin Morris. You can't even question him. So it's a big mystery about Joe Biden and why his family's influence peddling was being protected, encouraged maybe even, certainly covered up by the CIA, the FBI, the State Department, you name it.
Miranda, talk to me about Hunter Biden's shrink, because you just sat down with him on Pod Force One. That had to be frightening, honestly. I was going to say fascinating. That had to be horrifying.
Look, Keith Abloh, Dr. Keith Abloh, is a very interesting man. He was Hunter Biden's former shrink, as you say. He's ethical, so he's not discussing with us the secrets of the shrink couch, but he certainly was able to sort of diagnose and talk about the things that we know publicly about Hunter Biden, and so without divulging secrets. And, you know, it does go back to what I've always thought, I mean, with some sympathy towards Hunter Biden, that his mother and little sister, baby sister, were killed in a car crash where he and his older brother, Beau, were in the back seat. He was only two and his brother was three. And that was a very traumatic moment for him to be stuck in that car. Then he was recovering in hospital, he and his brother, for many months after that. And Joe Biden famously got sworn in as a senator by their bedside, which was a very, you know, heart-rending photograph to go all around the world. But if you zoom back a bit, you wonder, why does the father bring the world's media into his son's hospital room? They've just lost their mother, they're bandaged and wan, and he could have done it out in the corridor, but he has all these photographers and small rooms crammed in, journalists crammed into this room, completely unnecessary. And that sort of set the tune for his sort of fake Father of the Year routine that he did from then on. And I think he was not a good father, and certainly not to Hunter. And a lot of Hunter's problems, I think, come from that, because there's a real love-hate relationship. And it was interesting what Dr. Abloh said about Hunter's abandoning all these laptops around the time that his father was announcing that he was running for president yet again in April of 2019. Within weeks of that date, Hunter Biden had abandoned famously the laptop that we ended up looking into from Delaware, that was dropped off at the laptop repair shop around the corner from his house in Wilmington. But there was another laptop that not many people know about, that around the same time Hunter abandoned at the Newburyport, Massachusetts home or guest house of Dr. Keith Abloh. Hunter was up there doing a sort of a drug detox thing with ketamine, unusual therapy. That's where those famous photographs come from, where Hunter is sort of squatting in this sort of sensory deprivation chamber, supposedly to get off drugs, but he's smoking crack and drinking vodka. That was Dr. Keith Abloh's place, and Hunter left his laptop behind, and Dr. Abloh called him repeatedly and texted him and said, come and get your stuff. And it was not just the laptop, but a whole lot of very expensive clothing and other personal effects, and Hunter just never picked it up and never answered. So Keith Abelow sort of surmises from a psychiatric point of view that, yes, that could be kind of a Freudian situation where Hunter kind of wanted to jettison. Well, my theory was that he wanted to actually damage his father's candidacy because he didn't want his father putting the whole family through that again. But Keith Abelow said also to basically jettison his past. He never really wanted to be part of his father's political life. And so this was a sort of a symbolic or psychological way of just getting rid of his entire life and starting afresh. And as we know, Hunter did start afresh. He went to California, he met his now wife, got married within a few weeks, and became an artist.
Oh. Miranda, thank you, ma'am. All right, let's talk about the media with the panel next. Before we talk about that, have I told you about Massa Chips? Of course I've told you about Massa Chips. I'm a chip man, as you know, because we already talked about it once during the show. Massa Chips are the greatest. Well, for one, I don't have to get the stink eye from my wife every time I eat some chips, because these are actually not bad for you. Just three ingredients, multiple flavors. Go get some Massa Chips in your life. If I may recommend it, get yourself a little bottle of hot sauce, your favorite hot sauce. I'm a green sauce man. And look, I know it's sports season, football season, baseball playoffs. Massa Chip, little dab of hot sauce. That's snack heaven. Go to massachips.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Their ratings are terrible.
They are terrible.
MSNBC is dying and CNN is dying like a dog.
And
poor CNN, they're so pathetic.
It is very pathetic.
You ever see their anchors in the evening? That nobody ever heard of them. Where do these people come? I could take anybody off the street in Washington, D.C. They'd do a better job.
Sunshine, are you considering walking that path?
Who are you with?
Politico, Dasha Burns, sir.
Dasha Politico. Politico's gone bad. They've been so wrong about everything. Politico has been so wrong about everything. Let's get somebody else to ask some questions. You mind? Is that all right? Because Politico is fake news.
In the ceasefire.
This is CNN speaking, by the way. So,
are you personally
participating? This is one of the worst reporters that you'll ever see. I don't even want to take a question. It's a waste of time. Go ahead.
Joining me now, a couple ladies who understand the media well because they've had to deal with these animals all the time. Virginia Allen, senior news producer with the Daily Signal, and Mary Margaret Olihan, who, of course, is with the Daily Wire, White House correspondent. Okay, first of all, Mary Margaret, let's start with you. Media Fest 2025, what was it and what happened?
You know, I'm someone that loves to talk to students. I know Virginia does as well. We have lots to share from our reporting, and we had been asked to be on this panel and talk to students about faith and how it intersects with journalism. I'm Catholic, Virginia's Christian, and we have lots to share on this. We're on the ground all the time. We've worked hard for years. We have so much to impart to the next generation. And unfortunately, we were told that we didn't get to do so because of our beliefs, because we are conservative reporters, and I would argue because we come from a faith-filled perspective, unlike the rest of the religiously illiterate media.
Okay, Virginia, could you clarify this for me? It was a faith panel but two women of faith were not allowed on the faith panel. What faith is allowed on the panel?
That's a great question, Jesse. Apparently, the major concern that the organizers of this conference had was that as people of faith who hold biblical values, they were shocked enough to uninvite us, that Mary Margaret and I both hold to a traditional view of marriage, that marriage is between a man and a woman. Mary Margaret, of course, has authored an awesome book called Detrans. I have a podcast called Problematic Women, where we speak very openly about traditional values, about, you know, the biblical definition of marriage. And the organizers of this conference, specifically one gentleman out of Oregon State University, his name is Steven Sandberg, and when they were looking at who's going to speak on this faith panel, keep in mind, he said, you know, I really take issue with these two women, and in his words, they're anti-LGBTQ views, which in many ways I take issue with that phrasing, because we simply hold biblical tradition and belief on marriage. And so in many ways, I wonder how that faith panel turned out, if they were only comfortable having people on a faith panel that espouse liberal talking points on LGBTQ issues, really question the quality of the kind of speakers that they're bringing into this conference.
Yeah, it almost seems like they have an opposing faith. Mary Margaret, are you trying to say that the Bible is against a couple dudes getting married?
Well, Jesse, I wrote a whole book on how transitioning is not helping children, and I would actually argue it's not helping anyone. But that kind of conversation is not allowed in the journalism world nowadays. When you look at these types of issues, the only perspective that will be entertained is that LGBTQ issues are the higher good. You look at how GLAAD, the Human Rights Campaign, the Trevor Project, they tell most journalists how to talk about these issues. They encourage journalists to say that so-called gender-affirming care is a good thing, even for kids. And so for the majority of journalists out there, there is no other option when you talk about these issues. It's just plain and simple. They believe the LGBTQ issues are settled. They believe that abortion is a good thing. And they believe that they are far to the left on all these culture war issues. And that if you're not, you're just weird and strange and maybe religious, which is hilarious because the majority of religious Americans who actually practice their faith, they don't support these kinds of things. They don't want explicit sex education. They don't want their children being pushed down a transgender ideology path. They support protecting life. And so these are the kinds of issues that Virginia and I have covered for years. We've covered them very honestly, by the way. We include everybody's perspective. When we talk about abortion, for example, I've interviewed men whose children have been aborted. I've interviewed women who have aborted their children. I've asked them all across this aisle how they felt about these things, how they impacted their lives. I've interviewed abortionists themselves. But keep in mind, the story that they particularly took issue with, that I've done, that they suggested damaged my credibility as a reporter, was an exclusive I got from Congressman Brandon Gill about how he was introducing legislation to ban flushing aborted baby body parts into our water systems. And I wrote a story on this bill, and they said that they had objections to it, and to me as a journalist, because I dared even say what was happening, because I dared even acknowledge that this happens. And that's the reality of the situation that we have come to with journalism.
Yeah. The weirdos are the people who believe in Jesus, not the one trying to chop off kids' penises. Virginia, could you explain why is faith in journalism? Why is there any intersection there at all? Shouldn't you just keep your beliefs separate and shut up?
I think so much of the media has been told that for so long. And I'll say a couple points on that. For one, we are human beings, and our faith, our values, I think not only will influence our reporting, whether we want to admit it or not, but I would argue, speaking from a Christian perspective, they should influence our work, because when I'm upholding biblical standards of integrity and authenticity and care for the people that I'm interviewing to tell stories, well, quite frankly, my work's just going to be better if I'm keeping in mind that, you know, at the end of the day, as a Christian, I have an audience of one, and that's ensuring that that my work is up to the highest standards, because at the end of the day, I answer to my Lord the Savior Jesus Christ. And so all of our work, all of our media, you know, we need to keep that and bear that perspective in mind. And I think that was the perspective that Mary Margaret and I were so excited to share with young journalists who are people of faith of, hey, these aren't actually two separate things. You don't kind of take off your faith and check it at the door when you walk into your workplace. You bring that with you, and your work is actually better when you bring it with you. And you're going to face opposition in the workplace, no matter where you are. You're going to face opposition in this current media landscape that is so agenda-driven. But your faith can be the thing that roots you, that anchors you, that gives you a really, really strong and powerful foundation. And, you know, I think, Jesse, especially in a day and age when young people aren't getting that on their campus universities, because journalism programs across the United States are so woke and so far left, conferences like MediaFest actually provide a really beautiful platform to bring in other perspectives and to show, hey, you can think about journalism a little bit differently. You can incorporate your faith to remind young people of that. You can be a conservative and also be a journalist. And yet MediaFest chose to uninvite two strong faith-based journalists because they simply didn't want our voices present, didn't want our views present. And Jesse, you know, I think the ironic thing is also that that individual from Oregon State University, Steven Sandberg, he was the one that raised those concerns. He ultimately decided not to come and not to bring any of his students because he felt like the conference didn't go far enough in correcting the error of their ways to dare to bring on diverse voices to speak at this conference, which again, I think just highlights how really radical and the one agenda that the planners of these conferences were trying to seek and fulfill. And also to bear in mind that, you know, next year this conference is going to face the exact same pressure from people like the gentleman at Oregon State University. And so it's really critical that we continue to tell this story and encourage diversity in media that's representative of all Americans, not just a select few in the very liberal enclaves across our country.
Yeah. Ladies, you probably dodged a bullet by not going. Imagine the smell. Thank you both. I appreciate you. Come back soon. We have Light in the Mood next.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's time to lighten the mood, and it's football season, as you probably know. And look, it was not long ago when the sports world seemed like it was completely overrun with communists, and the good people were quiet, keeping their heads down, their mouths shut. Vanderbilt goes out, beats LSU. Their quarterback, Diego Pavia, he didn't keep his head down and his mouth shut.
Congratulations. What was this performance like for you and this team?
Well, I feel like, you know, I got a little overwhelming the past few weeks, and I really wasn't just being myself, you know, and I wasn't really chasing God, and so he was there to humble me, you know, and so Eli was there to tell me, like, where I was making the mistake, you know, and that's where I was making the mistake, and I just got back on path. Obviously, no one's perfect, but I just want to chase him and encourage everyone to chase him, you know, that's a better life out there.
Kids are going to be all right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.